to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
I'm just waiting for my guests, Brains. This is my book, okay? I'm writing another one. Oh, here she is. She's here. Hi, baby cakes.
Finally, we got there.
Girl, patience, patience. If COVID has taught me nothing, it has allowed me a lot more patience. That's for sure.
I was just sitting here waiting. It's all okay.
Yeah, I don't know. And you know, sometimes it's heavy traffic. A lot of people are using it. When I had an opportunity to buy Zoom stock, I didn't do it. I slept on it. And it's like $340 a share now.
Oh.
I know.
See?
I know. I'm so glad to have you, JL Keys, all the way from Australia. I've been waiting for you, you know, and I've been watching The Crown and just thinking about you and your story and your poetry and, you know, your coaching. I'm just so excited to have you here on the Edge with me and the Brains.
Hi.
Where's your postcard? Did you have your postcard? Did you get it?
Do you want me to go and get it?
Absolutely. She's another jewel, and we are going to have a special treat for you. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to give her a chance to come back and get her seat. Ooh. Look at that. Look at that. She is doing it. Wait, I always have my upside down. What do I be thinking? There you go.
There you go.
Perfect. Okay. The place, I'm going to start doing this. I'm going to start giving a prize when my guests say, Where the conversation is pointed, say it. When the conversation
Where the conversation is pointed.
The guests are sharp.
The guests are sharp.
And the responses are never dull.
And the responses are never dull.
Ah! Ding, ding, ding. Look at that. You are my first, okay? You're my first. You get a prize for that, so I will send you something. But in the meantime, we are just joking around, Brains, having a good time. I want you to meet JL Keys, author, speaker, a woman with a compelling story of redemption and recovery and strength, and she's funny and cute, and she's a poet. Oh, yes. So I think she's going to bust out some poetry, and I might surprise you and bust out some poetry too. Help me welcome her to the Edge, JL Keys.
Hello, lovely to be here.
Yes, I'm glad to have you. I'll be so glad when I can come down there to Australia.
It'll be lovely to have you here. We'll all come out. All those people that have been on your show, we'll all come together and say hi.
We have a big party, have a big love fest.
That's it.
That would be good. So tell my Brains a little bit about you, your story of recovery, redemption, and strength, and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's a very, very big story, so I'll try to condense it down but not lose any of its importance, I guess. I was a little girl, obviously, a long time ago, born onto a farm here in South Australia. And it was during those first 6 years of my life, not until I reached my 30s, though, that the foundations for my life moving ahead were certainly laid down. There were experience during that time. And little did I know the impact that would have on how I would relate to the world, how I would filter, how I saw the world and how I would connect to it. And so I guess, oh yes, I guess I'll say that now because this is a different sort of format. There was sexual abuse involved during those first 6 years at the hands of a few people. And there was also a very controlled upbringing. My parents were religious people and no fault of their own. They were following the path that had been set up for them and taught to them. But it did mean that it was a very controlling environment as well. So this very bright, bubbly blonde girl quickly reduced down into the person she felt she needed to be. Mm-hmm. And at the age of six, my father thought it was a good idea to go into the ministry, the Methodist ministry at the time. So we shifted down to Adelaide and spent 4 years there. And I went to two different schools. And it was during that time that I took the impact of being told at the time I was abused, you know, it will be all my fault. No one will like you. And with that filter and that dialogue running through my head each day, that's what I felt I saw. So I entered into the classroom feeling like I wasn't liked. And so I obviously gave out that to the other students around me. So it wasn't surprising that I became a target for bullying and exclusion. And that was my experience right through all of the schools that I went to. At the age of 10, I went to another one for 3 years down there at Port MacDonald, which is a beautiful little fishing village. And but it was also at the end of my time at Port MacDonald where I used to walk to the bus stop each day and I used to pass this house. And on this particular occasion, the lad who was the same age as me who lived in that house come belting out on his bike and nearly cleaned me up. And so he stopped to apologise. And we then began a friendship that existed just when we walked to school. And he'd come out every morning and we'd walk off to school. And it was during those conversations that I found out how different his life was and his home life was and what he could do that I wasn't able to do because I might get into trouble. And, you know, that discord in life and how life worked began to set up, and that became a puzzle in my head. They were drinkers. They went to cabarets. They, you know, had lots of money and they had a couple of cars and all of these things that we didn't have. And it was a very different message that they were living by. And I couldn't understand how they weren't being punished because I was scared that I would be. So punishment was certainly a theme in my life as well. So just fast forwarding very quickly, because as I said, there's a lot to this story. We then shifted to a place called Kimber, and that was a wheat and sheep district area here in South Australia. And it was, I became the top athlete. I won everything, set all the records, was a straight A student, highly bullied, highly excluded once again. So at the age of 15, I think I must have looked in the mirror and gone, you know what, JL, I just wanted friends. And I looked in the mirror and I thought, maybe it's what I look like, because you don't make those connections. So I changed my diet. I lost a lot of weight. My athletic career went. I was a vocalist singing everywhere. And that sort of dried up over the years because I didn't have the energy to do it. So, and that was when I went into this thing called anorexia nervosa. Mm. Not that we knew it at the time, because I'm quite a bit older. And back at the time when I was experiencing an eating disorder, there was no knowledge, no real attachment to that. I just lost weight. No one asked the question why, no one. So for the next 9 years, I just lived that debilitated life of not feeding myself properly and being very conscious of what I look like, and a whole host of other things that come into your life as parameters.
If I may.
Yeah, sure.
Because if I'm the extreme opposite, you know, my culture tends to overeat and become obese, you know, versus a form of starvation. And I'm trying to understand, mm-hmm, what could be going through your mind at that time that you think that, you know, you're not worthy of food? Because I've been watching The Crown. You ever watch The Crown on Netflix?
Yes,
I have.
Yes.
Girl, that's a cold piece, ain't it?
It certainly is. It's an eye-opener to what Diana experienced, for sure.
Yeah, and it was, you know, it was heart-wrenching for me. It was heart-wrenching for me. So I can't even imagine the physical, the mental, the spiritual, the associated shame, the how do I get over this? You know, I'm addicted to this. I can't even imagine what you went through, honey. I can't.
Well, for me, with those descriptions that you give it, addictive and shame and all of those things, in terms of the eating disorder, that wasn't in place. It was driven by, I want to be liked. I want to be accepted. I don't want to be bullied anymore. I want to be included in life. But I guess so restricting my food and keeping myself slim, I thought would achieve that. So that was why I did that part of it. But running alongside of that, yeah, I didn't at the time have shame. I just thought it was great that I was able to keep myself in this shape. And I was sure that, you know, acceptance would come through the door. And that was my motivation.
Did you have siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters?
I do. I have an older brother and two younger sisters. One of my sisters passed away 2 years ago.
And did they experience the same sort of trauma and abuse or?
I don't think my brother, and I'm speaking from my own opinion without their, you know, confirmation, only from the information that I have. It's my belief that certainly my sisters were most likely abused as well, and their paths in life and the choices that they've made would strongly indicate that that would be the case. Yeah, but it was never something
so tragic. I don't even understand, you know, why, what the fascination with a child. It turns my stomach. I can't even imagine.
No, and because you don't have that opportunity to be able to sit down with a perpetrator and say, look, what drives you? What in your thinking? The only thing that I come close to was when I was discussing with my mother about an uncle who was a perpetrator and he wasn't one of mine. And the naivety, I guess, in her response of, well, it was done to him as a child, so he didn't think he was doing anything wrong. So well, it's those.
There was a lot of that cover up.
Yeah, it's a lot of covering up. And I guess that was his learned behavior, and he took it on board and he continued it forward. But by the time I come to the realization that was my background, we certainly had learned and grown, and we should have known better to actually pull that person up and do something about it rather than just make excuses for his.
And you know, the people that are actually the perpetrators and allowing that have a lot of shame too, you know, because they could have been victimized. But let's fast forward a little bit and talk about how you have really kind of overcome, and maybe not even overcome, but you've interweaved that story into your life to do great successful things now, because you know we can't stay stuck in that space. So how are you able to, you know, break free? And let me ask you a big girl question, my second question. How did you feel comfortable finding love after all of that and being intimate? Again, I know that's a kind of personal question. If it's too personal, you don't have to answer it, but you know, after you've experienced that kind of trauma to yourself and from outside influences, that takes a real heavy mind shift, JL. It does.
It really does. And it took a long time. I mean, even I did eventually be diagnosed with anorexia nervosa and the old fashioned way, put on weight, weigh you every week and all of that. And gradually, and we won't go into the story of how that unfolded for me, but in its place was replaced migraines, chronic fatigue, depersonalization, OCD and suicidal depression. So it didn't leave me. And then at the age of 37, I met a female psychologist who practiced reality therapy, which was designed by Dr. William Glasser, an American psychiatrist. And it was that therapy that helped change my mindset. So she looked at my story, she looked at the events in my life, and she looked at my thoughts and my behaviors and my emotions, and we unlocked and unpacked and redesigned my life, if you like. You know, this is the thinking that you were giving. Is it really who you are, or, you know, do we need to adopt another lot of thinking? So that was the process out, and it certainly wasn't an easy one because it was lined with a lot of fear, and fear can be a huge obstacle. Actually,
you keep re-traumatizing, you know, you keep doing that. It's like people with PTSD. I've talked to some world-renowned experts here in the U.S. where they take you to a certain point, like in hypnotherapy, that you get right to that point, but you don't actually re-enter that event. I don't know what that is. It's, you know, changing your psyche some kind of way. But you've taken all of that and you've put it in a book.
I have. Just to come back to answer, I think part of the second part of that question that you shared there. No, that's okay. And the reason I go back to it is because I think it might be important for people who are listening to us sharing our conversation today. You asked about intimacy, you know, when you've been abused, and certainly that is a huge hurdle to deal with. I had it on two levels, so one from being sexually abused and one from being in a religious upbringing where, you know, you don't be intimate until you're married, and this is bad and that's bad and you shouldn't do this. And you, so I had so many voices telling me what this thing called intimacy is all about. So that was hugely confusing for me as well. So I did go through a line of men, I suppose, who were controlling men and abusive men and a whole gamut. And I don't include my ex-husband in that. I think he had a job on his own, you know, putting up with who I was during the period of time that, I mean, he did say he controlled me through
money. Were you a hot mess? Were you difficult to deal with then?
I don't know that I was difficult to deal with. I think he would have to answer that question for you. But oh, I was certainly...
Now, you know, as a woman, were we difficult to deal with? You know, that's no... Okay, there's no mistaking about that, sister, honey. They know when I show up, I show out.
Yeah. I guess in terms of him, yes. And I have apologized to him in recent years.
I sat down.
Look, this is the person I was. I wish I knew my background, you know, because you had difficulty. But yes, I was certainly... My children, everything had to be perfect. The house had to be perfect. My children had to be perfect. He had to behave in a particular way and all of those things, which I'm sure was, you know, very difficult for him to live with. So there was certain, and then we, you know, we could do another whole hour just on that topic. But in terms of intimacy, yes, it did interrupt that process. Mm-hmm. And with all the, you know, not allowed to's and this, that, the other, when that time came, it was, well, what am I allowed to do? What am I allowed to experience? Am I allowed to be like this? Am I allowed to be like that? And so, for viewers that have had this same experience, you'll know what I'm talking about. And I think it's almost an area that we then need, even though we might heal, we might need to go and speak to, you know, someone who deals in that area even further to go deeper and say, yes, we are allowed to have this experience. And but how do we get there? How do we do that? So that might be an extension of the healing process. And I'm just thinking of that now because I didn't do it. And I'm just thinking that probably would have been a good avenue to go down.
I mean, you know what? It's never too late. You don't have to revisit the whole thing because there's a learning. There's a learning in every opportunity. I've been wanting to do, I was going to do this before. I was going to check out some past life regression. Just kind of observe it and start studying it. Because a lot of people are doing that now, you know, and it's called the generational trauma. And so we have to heal because it is generational and it'll pass on. Do you have children?
Yes, I do. Yeah, they're adults now, 35 and 32. But
a girl and a boy or?
Yes, my son's 35 and my daughter's 32.
And were you able to have candid, frank conversations about your experience and life experiences with them?
My daughter more so, because I guess she lived in Sydney and she's like my best friend. And we talked a lot about this, particularly when we came out and put it on the table. My son lived here in Adelaide and chose to continue to connect with my extended family. So I didn't want to make that process hard for him. So he didn't learn about a lot of it. You know, I took great care with both their emotional pathways moving forward. And it's only been 12 months ago because my children were at loggerheads with each other, and I realized that the gap in knowledge of my story was what was creating that loggerhead moment. So I did sit down with my son and I said, look, you know, I held a lot back from you because you needed to make your own decision of how you would move forward with the extended family, and I didn't want to influence that in any way. And
let me say something else, JL.
Sorry?
Let me tell you something else. And brains, listen, your kids are not naive. They're the smartest people on the planet, okay? I love kids. They're honest, they're pure, they absorb that and they process it in their own way. He knew what was going on if he lived in the house or interact between the two of you. It's just he processed it different. And men process different than women, you know, and what he was getting over from his extended family and what you were going through. And then hearing about your trauma, it's just a lot to process. Yes, so you've taken all of this experience, knowledge, but now you thrive. Look at you. You are gorgeous. Your cheeks are bright. You look like you're very, very happy. Hey, let me tell you, makeup do wonders, girl.
It does when you get to this age.
Well, you know what? But we're here, and you are here to tell the tale. And with poetry, tell us about your book and tell me about your poetry. I brought my book.
And this is my book.
Let me see. Wait a minute. Let me get a big old close-up of you with your book. Put that, now put, move your face over there. I need you to be like real all up in it. That's right. Look at that. Now, where can we get your book? On Amazon?
Yes. If you actually, if you go to my website, jlkeys.com.au, I have a, you know, a landing page there devoted to the book, telling you why I've written it and who I've written it for, and where you can source it from, both in paperback and ebook. So get that's the best way to get a copy of it.
Wow, that's great. You know what? Can we raffle off a copy? Do you have a copy we can raffle off?
We can.
Okay.
We can.
We'll do that. And I'll raffle off a copy of mine. So okay. you're gonna read a poem. Let me hear how you put it down there in Australia, girl.
I'm going to do a couple of short things, if that's okay, rather than
absolutely. It's your world. I'm going to sit here and enjoy my drink.
So this is just at the beginning of the book. This is chapter one of the book and the introduction, I guess, into, you know, my story moving forward. And it's called It Was Sunday, I Turned Two. Sunday, February the 28th was my birthday. I turned two. A life-defining milestone filled with love, laughter, family and fun, one may have thought. Instead, a life-defining experience delivered with force, humiliation and tremendous fear would alter my perception of the world and create long-held foundations, influencing how life would be lived from that moment on. The sheer enormity of actions bestowed would see this memory bury itself deep within the layers of my being for 35 years. The power of the words spoken would carry weight in every decision made, thought created, behavior chosen, emotion felt, physical illness experienced, and relationship entered into. That's the beginning of what lies ahead. And oh, no, don't. Sorry, I've got little markers in my book and I thought I was going to lose it.
Take your time. We're here. We just have nothing but time for you. Take your time.
Okay, so back in 2014, when my recovery was almost complete, I discovered that I could write poetry. In one weekend, I wrote 12. No, one week, I don't know, but in one day, I wrote 12 and I got a little bit over it. But this was one of the early ones. And throughout my book, I have about 30 of them, just put in where it supports the text. But this one stood out to be shared today with you, April. When a child is born, marvel at the beauty. Be intrigued by who they will be. Nurture the needs as they present. Watch for indicators as to what will be defining characteristics, attributes, interests, likes, dislikes, personality traits. Get excited that you are the privileged one witnessing this soul progress. Support the inherent aspects that together complete this child. Unconditionally accept. Do not demand, scold, condemn, disapprove, criticize. Instead, gently show them the way with loving approval. Help them celebrate the uniqueness they represent. Allow them to fall down and learn. Their strength will grow from here. Don't call them naughty. How do they know? Guide this child to know. And when the child is all grown up, be glad you know who they are, not who you made them be. And I guess that one stands out because that's how I reflect when I look back at my recovery. I was a child who was pushed into a pathway that I needed to go down for acceptance and all of that sort of thing from my family's perspective, and I needed to shift out of there. So thank goodness, I think I made the change when my children were 10 and 7 and I stepped back because I was repeating the pattern. And I stepped back and I got to know who these two little people were and allowed them to move through life becoming the people that they really are. So that was the gift given to me through my recovery, was given to them. So that was great.
You paid it forward, but you sacrificed so much. So I'm going to read a poem too, since you read a poem. Okay. And this is from my book, Utter Magic. Can you see that, Brains? I don't know. The light is not good right here. Can you see? There you go.
There it is.
So I wrote this book years ago and still selling it. People, you have to sell your books, right? JLK?
Yes.
Please. You have to sell your books, brains. You're sitting there and the books are sitting there looking at you. Get out there and really, I mean, promote them. You write them as your body of work, right?
Yes, exactly.
So this one kind of stood out for me, and it's called Empty Suit. Pomp and circumstance is what his ego demands. Why? Because he wears the pants. His fat, ugly ass, he can't even dance. He's just an empty suit and a pair of alligator boots. And I'm filled to the brim with him because he ignores me and whores me and rejects me. My lack of self-esteem is what propels these flames, that coupled with greed. He's just an empty suit and a pair of alligator boots. And yes, I succumb to his desire. I get off when he calls me madame. I reply, yes, sire. He reminds me of a New York congressman. He's such a liar. And as much ass as I give away, I should be retired. He's just an empty suit and a pair of alligator boots. And here I lay in this hotel suite, waiting for a shallow piece of meat to come around the bend, get naked, bend me over, and stick it in. I hate him. I just pretend that he's just an empty suit in a pair of alligator boots. You feel that, sister?
Yeah, I do. And I'm wondering what the background of that is.
This is what we do. Do you do this in Australia? Well, come on, give me some love. I'm clapping to you. You snap. Yeah, that's hand claps or finger snaps. And they have a spot of tea and they smoke cannabis. Do you guys have like speakeasies there in Australia?
Speakeasy?
Yeah. Girl, you should open one. A cool little, like a little coffee shop, kind of tea shop, a vibe. And you bring in guitarists and you bring in poets and, you know, have like a open mic. We'll talk about it offline. Oh, yes. You've got to have one of those.
Well, they have open mic for singers. They do that, but I don't know whether they have open mic for poetry. I've not heard of it, but I'll investigate.
And you have a lot more freedom there in Australia than we do in the US. You guys are able to get out and go somewhere.
Well, we are. There was a scare in terms of COVID, you mean. There was a scare recently. But look, in Adelaide here, we've hardly noticed it. It's been a non-event for us, really. We've locked down and we've done that a couple of times, you know, for short periods of time, but we certainly haven't experienced what you have. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's been devastating. Sorry?
Quite tragic. I said it's quite tragic.
It is.
Okay. And you know what? In closing, what has all of this taught you? I mean, you know, just what has all of this taught you in a nutshell?
Oh, gosh. The main thing that I learned in my recovery was that the relationships that we enter into have the ability to either nurture us or ruin us. So relationship connection is at the core of everything, because it was the relationships that I had unintended, you know, through abuse, but also the relationships I had with two parents that I became very frightened of, that would determine how I related and how I related to others and how I grew and how I developed. So if anyone's in recovery, have a look at the relationships around you. You know, which ones of those are impacting and need resolving in some way. So that was my greatest.
Or just learning. Cut them off. What do you think about that? Do you just cut people off? I'll cut you off. I don't be bothered with you. I'm not going to argue and fight. And you can only work with them so much, especially, and I say this with love, you know, in-laws on both sides, you know, they can interject and interfere in a marriage and just make it extra. And so you have to quiet
them very much for just. Yeah, I make it, well, it's easy for me now because I've developed that way of life, but no, my children are free in their lives. They can talk to me. They can do what they like. I'm sure they do things I don't know about, and I really don't care. But interfering with other people and in their lives, that's just not me. But yes, you do cut yourself off. You try, like within my family area, I tried to close the gap. I wanted to have those conversations with my siblings and my mother because my father suicided and left. But the refusal to do so, no one would do it with me or for me. So I did have to step back and make that difficult decision of not being a part of my family anymore. So I haven't seen them for about 8 years, you know, but they had every opportunity,
I know,
you know, to go down that path, and they chose not to.
Everything happens for a reason, darling, but you're not alone. Yeah. You're loved. You have your husband, you have your, you know, your kids, you have your life, redemption, and you got a book. Let me see that book one more time. Put that book up so everybody can see it. Now you can purchase that on Amazon.
Yes, you can.
Okay, you gotta keep it still though. Yeah, I don't want them to miss nothing. Perfect. Oh, I love it. So tell my brains how to get in contact with you in the blatosphere here online. And thank you so much, JL Keys. You've just been amazing and you've been so open and honest. You are going to help many, many people with your message.
Well, that's my intention and I hope that unfolds for me. So I will just say that you can go onto my website, www.jlkeys.com.au, where you'll find JL Keys Anorexia Unlocked. And that's the website and the business that I set up last year that has a lot of different programs to assist people in healing from eating disorders. So that's that business side of it, I suppose. And then obviously my book. But if you want to get in touch with me personally, you might have something that you want to ask or find out or discover or whatever, then my private email, and this one is the one that I see, so anything written there is very confidential. Write to hello@jlkeys.com.au and I will look at every message that comes through and answer it ASAP for interested people.
The ABCs of life. She's got it. JL Keys right here on the edge. Thank you so much for being here with me. Wonderful.
Thanks for having me.
Brains, I need you to go in and subscribe. Okay. I need your commitment. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, to the Blog Talk Radio. We are getting crazy hits. They are picking us up on everybody all over the world. I'm so excited about that. Leave a comment. You know, comments are important. If you don't want to go and do a full-on email, thank you, like something, support a sister because she didn't have to tell you all her business. And thank you so much. And your poetry is absolutely amazing. It really resonated with my heart. Continue to be a shining light. And, you know, you're going to be a wonderful person to a lot of people in this world. Thank you so much, JL.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really look forward to it. Thank you, April.
All right.